Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off.
I want to also be very clear that I think that films and books have tricked us into believing that you will have an epiphany and your life will change. And what people need to know is that change is frustratingly, unbelievably incremental.
Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and on today's show, I'm joined by author Courtney Hameister to talk about her new book, Okay, Fine, Whatever, and how getting over your fears in and out of the bedroom can make for a profusely better life all around. Plus, I'm answering your sex and relationship questions. Topics include how someone who has an anxiety disorder went from being afraid of everything to going to sex parties, dating over 100 people, and even went to a professional cuddler. Why it's okay not to know what you like sexually as long as you start taking steps to get there. What to do when there's a possible four-way in your future. And whether or not online interactive porn is actually cheating. All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's
got
to have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, it feels so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, check out sexwithemily.com, and we are Sex with Emily across the board. Intentions with Emily. So for each show, let's all start out by setting an intention for the show. And I'm doing it, and I encourage you to do the same. So what I mean is, like, when you're listening right now, you can even stop this after I tell you what it's all about and think about it. What do you want to get out of listening to this episode, and how might it help you? It could be like, I have so much anxiety, Emily. How can I not let it ruin my life? Or I've just been dealing with a lot of internal struggles and would love to hear how others got past it on their own. So my intentions for the show is show you that despite whatever scares you, wherever you're at in your relationship or your sex life, you can always improve. And I also love that Courtney gets into how, you know, it's okay to know what you don't like, because the more you figure out what you don't like, you can actually get to what you do like. So enjoy the show. First, I have to introduce my guest who just came in and she's fondling the lube and the vibrators, as guests do.
Yes.
It's very Courtney exciting. Hameister. Mm-hmm. Her book, Okay, Fine, Whatever, The Year I Went From Being Afraid of Everything to Only Being Afraid of Most Things. Congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
We loved it. And if you want to find it, or your links and everything is on our show notes at sexwithemily.com. Just click on the link that says show notes. Super easy.
Yeah.
Courtney, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so you say that you are a professional nervous person.
Yes. Yeah. An odd way to sell yourself, I think. But
okay, your book is all about really how you're like, I've been anxious. You actually were diagnosed. Isn't it great when you finally get diagnosed? You're like, oh, I have anxiety. That's why life has been hard.
Exactly. Or yeah. That's why for me, it was like, it sort of explained my pessimistic outlook. Like I thought for the years, I just thought, oh, I'm such a Debbie Downer and I'm such an Eeyore. And then when I got a diagnosis of generalized anxiety disorder, it was like, oh, this is my pathology. It's not me,
right.
You know? And absolutely my pathology has created these neural pathways in my brain that say everything's going to suck.
Right.
But I didn't do that myself. And so it also made me think, well, maybe that can change because it's not inherent in my DNA necessarily. Exactly. Although I guess if it's a pathology,
well,
maybe it is.
The thing is, it because I love, well, when we first saw you, when we first were introduced to you, you have your video about your book, your little, which mm-hmm. is so great. You're like, there I was. Were you 6 years old or eight years old on the edge of a diving board, which I could so relate to that. And you're about to jump in the water and you get scared and all mm-hmm. the kids yelling. It's so well done. All the kids are yelling and you're like, well, this is the moment where I decide I do not jump. I don't leap.
Yeah.
I don't take risks. I'm going to have a seat here. I'm not jumping off the high. So do you actually think that was like the first moment that you remember it? Or do you think it was because of that moment? Like,
I think reinforced? I mean, I think that I absolutely knew it at that moment. Like, I was like, oh, I'm a scaredy cat, you know? But I'm not sure if there was some moment prior to that. But certainly looking back, it's my first memory of just, like, having the knowledge and doing something that was so clear in terms of what I felt like my personality was.
It's just a great descriptor. Because I think we can all just kind of picture like moments, or at least I have, having so much therapy, like, oh, it's because of my parents and all these things. But that's the moment, like, first of all, you remember.
Yeah.
I mean, your book is so great because you have this moment and you're like, I'm going to just try everything that scares the shit out of me.
Yes.
Which is so brave. Mm-hmm. And the things that you do, like, what happened? How did you decide to go on this journey?
Well, it was because I lost something extraordinary. And I think, you know, based on what your job is, you can relate to this. But I had hosted a radio variety show in Portland, Oregon. And it was really, I mean, I think it was the coolest job in Portland at the time. I was, you know, it was on like NPR affiliates and syndicated. And I got to speak to Carrie Brownstein and Gus Van Sant and Mike Birbiglia and comics that I so admired and writers and David Rakoff, who's one of my all time favorite writers I got to interview. And so
LiveWire.
Yeah, it's called LiveWire.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, it's a pop. Yes. Totally.
Yeah. Luke like Burbank hosts
yes,
it now.
Yes, of course.
And so I did that for a while and I did that for 9 years, and every week we had a show. I was also the head writer, and what I called my dread ball would arrive on Monday morning, and it would be about golf ball sized. And then by show day, I was in a hamster ball of anxiety, just walking around. And what anxiety does to you is it does create. It's like looking at the world through a piece of glass, a very thick piece of glass, and everything feels muted or like there's static, right? And so you can imagine. Think about doing your job that you're doing right now. And when you have anxiety, it's difficult to actually take people in, you
yeah.
know, because there's all this static in the way. And so you've got to really listen to people
yep.
in order to have a good conversation with them.
Did you feel though, when you were doing this, because you were great at it. So even though when you were in the moment, you were able to listen, or sometimes you felt not as much?
Sometimes not as much.
Right.
And sometimes I would really stick to my list of questions. And so it didn't make me as great at my job as I could have been. Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
But you lose a job.
So then the job.
And I just had a massive 2-day panic attack and I had to step down. And once that happened, I had a moment where I realized what I'd lost. And as an anxious or neurotic person, and as a person whose self-esteem is periodically in the gutter, you know, being in front of 400 people every couple of weeks,
oh my God,
applauding you is a great way to
I
fight
anxious.
That. Yes.
Because I feel like no one's like, I know people are listening, but I don't often, I don't see them, I don't meet them, and I want
yes.
to. I'm going to come see you all this month on tour.
Mm-hmm.
But that's scary.
Oh, yeah.
Because I mean, like, I don't know people. They say there's listeners, but mm-hmm. I don't see them.
Yeah, well, and they always say, like, picture everybody naked. But, like, people in Portland wear a lot of fleece.
Like,
and it's impossible.
No,
there's so many layers. And it's just like, I can't. I have no idea. So
if I had to trust one person with my eyes, it would be take 20 minutes.
Exactly. Right. And it's distracting. It's
right.
like, how big is his penis?
Right.
And so I had lost this thing. And it was a thing that made me a writer. And it was a thing that made me all these friends. And so I thought, is there a way that I can teach my brain in small ways that everything's going to be okay. So I didn't jump out of planes.
Right.
I was jumping back into the dating pool as well. And so I also did dating stuff. So I went to a sensory deprivation tank because I'm afraid of the dark and I'm claustrophobic. And I went to a professional cuddler because I'm afraid of talking to strangers. So
can
I spooned
talk
with
about,
one.
I mean, that's what I love. You talk about, like, you were looking to date and then you posted on Facebook and
yes.
said, like, if you guys know anybody,
yeah,
like, and then you went on all the apps, like, that is so brave. So which part of it was first? So tell me about one of the, like, yeah, I love, because each chapter kind of breaks down one of the things that you you went through.
And yeah. I mean, I think that the cuddler was, I mean, when it's so interesting when I was recently on a podcast with someone who just kind of doesn't like to be touched. And she just said, I had to stop reading the chapter. It was so disturbing to me, and
wow.
she was getting an anxiety attack from reading it. And for me, I actually adore being touched, and part of the reason that I went to the cuddler was that I thought, am I too needy?
Yeah.
Like, I was missing touch for a very long time. Like, I've been heavy my whole adult life, and I had the unbelievably fucked up idea that made me unlovable and that no one would want to touch me because of that. And so I really steered clear of relationships for a long time. And so when I did get into one, I mean, I was a gigantic fan of sex, you know, and I mean, I continue to be, right?
I know you also lost your virginity late.
Oh, yeah. I was
34.
I was 34 years old, and I'm not Mormon.
Right. You're
I'm
like,
not
let
Amish.
Me preface this.
Like,
it was anxiety. And no one had said to you, like, hey, Courtney, maybe this is anxiety. Do you have anything?
I mean, you know, what's really interesting is just this, like, the language around anxiety and mental illness in this country, I think, is really, it's inefficient. It's
yes.
inaccurate, right? So for a long, everyone just, I was neurotic. I was the neurotic friend,
right.
You know, and I was absolutely, like, when I was with that first boyfriend, my neuroticism really bugged him. I would be really interested to see if, had I been diagnosed, if he would have felt differently about that.
Right.
You know, that I wasn't just, like, annoyingly neurotic. But there's also this issue of saying that I'm anxious about this, or I'm depressed, right? There is situational depression and there is clinical depression,
right.
And they are very different things. And so that's what's difficult about the language of it.
Right.
It was really interesting. No one ever really did say, hey, have you thought about going to a therapist? Because
right.
It was, in some ways, it was just like, oh, that's kind of cute.
It's your personality,
and,
right? They're like, oh,
yes.
That's just Courtney. She's just neurotic and she gets mm-hmm. anxious and nervous. And
you hide it well. You are,
yes.
you know, you talking about, you know, I've listened to your podcast. And I would never have imagined that you were an anxious person. People who have anxiety hide it really well.
Oh, yeah.
It's part of the way that we live in the world. And it's also part of the reason that I think we just need to talk about anxiety
right.
more.
Because yeah.
if everyone was honest about it, then it wouldn't have the stigma that it currently
yeah.
has.
There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's a kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. I think you're right. I'm talking to Courtney Hameister. I said that.
Yeah.
Okay, correctly. Fine, whatever. The year I went from being afraid of everything to only being afraid of most things. I love the way you write. I think it's just a great read. You're hilarious. I mean, everyone thinks you're hilarious. And I love that you have a comment from Cheryl Strayed and Chelsea Clinton on your... Chelsea Clinton. I always do that. Every time I talk about Chelsea Handler, I say Chelsea Clinton. And I don't know why.
They're so similar.
But so, exactly. Because I grew up with the Clintons, and I don't know why. That's my dominant Chelsea, which is fucking
She's
weird.
She's your dominant Chelsea.
But I That's love hilarious. Chelsea Handler. Like, obsessed.
Anyway,
that happens. Weird shit comes out of my mouth. I devoured her book.
I interviewed her on her last tour, and I always thought that she was talented and funny, but she was never one of the people that I followed significantly because, to be honest, I thought she was a little mean.
Yeah.
And she doesn't like fat people,
right.
You know, has never really liked fat people, which is problematic for me. And then she wrote this unbelievable book,
right. she talked about
evolving so significantly. And that book is so beautifully written and so funny and so poignant. I mean, I was crying in the car.
Same.
I gotta say, I hugely admire what she's doing right now.
Yes, absolutely.
It's insane to me that she can be so vulnerable right now after, because she was the opposite of vulnerable.
Right.
She was so cold. And so
exactly. No, it's amazing to watch her. I agree. I'm like, oh yeah, now we can all kind of relate more when you're honest about what is going on with you,
mm-hmm.
with your struggles. Because I feel like, is that kind of what motivated you to write this book as well? So people kind of can learn, you know, feel like I have anxiety and this is okay. And this is how you deal with it. Did it help you, all these things? Do you feel like now you are, what do you say, you're a little less afraid?
I mean, and I absolutely learned things throughout the year, and I think that one of the big lessons that I learned throughout the year was that, you know, I think that there are all of these books out there that are, you know, that are just sort of all about, like, you know, just go for it, lady, you know, go girl or boy or whatever the fuck you are, like, just and it makes people like me feel like I will never do that because I will never be enthusiastic about anything, right? It's just not the way that I'm wired, right? And so, but what's amazing is I did, you know, I went to, you know, Build Your Own Burrito Night at a sex club, and
about Build Your Own Burrito Night, where they did not have all the fixins.
No, they didn't have tortillas, which is, I'm sorry, it's the anchor of a burrito. Beyond that, you're having beans and rice.
Right. But I love that you went to a sex party, but we're talking about the burrito.
I was very upset.
I understand. No, you're right. And Jamie's obsessed with, she's never been to a sex party, but all she wants to know is what kind of food they serve. I went to one a few weeks ago.
Literally.
There was no, I didn't have sex or food, but she was like, just tell me what kind of food you had. There was like chocolate.
There has to be fuel. There's got to be sustenance.
How do you keep going?
I feel. That's what I felt like. I don't know.
But not too much sustenance, right? Because then it's like you have to worry about what position you're in because you've got like a burrito baby.
Actually, Mexican food is weird for a sex party.
Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, okay. So how did you feel at the sex party? This is what I want to know, is that now in doing this stuff, and you're right, it's not one side. Like, I started the show saying, like, people have a lot of social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you that when you're out just saying hi to people, it is a muscle that we don't often use. Like, do you feel like you are a little bit better now, maybe in dealing some situations that were harder for you before this?
Absolutely. Like,
It
never goes away. And I want to also be very clear that I think that films and books have tricked us into believing that you will have an epiphany and your life will change. And what people need to know is that change is frustratingly, unbelievably incremental.
Yes.
And so what happened to me was I spent this year doing these things that were completely outside of my comfort zone. And what it did for me was to change one word. And that one word was interesting. So if someone were to say, hey, let's do this thing that I'd never done before, I would say, well, that sounds terrifying, or absolutely not. And now I say, well, that sounds interesting. And that small change is unbelievably significant.
Wow.
And the thing is, when people talk about changing your life too, you know what? If you have one more interesting hour in a year, your life has changed.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. So, I love that. This is so true.
Yeah. So it's just like, I think that people's expectations around how their life is going to change.
Right.
But also, I think that what I was talking about before was that you can still do all of these things and have an interesting life and have a rich life and do shit that changes you without being an enthusiastic person.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I mean, that's part of the lesson was, oh, fuck enthusiasm, because I didn't have it and I still had the most interesting year of my life.
You really did. You actually set out and you
right.
did it.
So yep. it's still, that's why it's called okay, fine, whatever, because that's what we say. That's what we Eeyore say when we're being right. dragged to like, get our
Everything.
Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't matter how amazing. The thing is, we're like, oh, I guess I'll get it, you know?
And that's because the messages we're saying is it's going to be hard or terrifying or whatever. Is that like, it's yeah. kind of like wiring?
Yeah, it's because your brain is what?
Protecting you from things that could happen or feeling fear or.
Well, and so there's an amazing group in Portland, Oregon called Create More, Fear Less. And they work with anxious kids with writing and exercises to help them change the way that they feel about their anxiety and manage it. And one of the messages to those kids, and I want everyone to know this,
yeah.
is that there are gifts that anxiety gives you. And one of them is a fucking amazing imagination.
Yeah.
Because we imagine the worst possible scenario every time we go into, you know, a situation.
Always.
Right.
Right? People do, like, they're like, oh, I'm not going to like anyone. I'm going to be rejected. It's going to be horrible.
Right. And almost all the time, that doesn't happen.
Right. Right. Right.
And so we're sort of pleasantly surprised. But what I would say to people is, you know, the goal should be to have no expectations. Not to have positive expect, just don't have any.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's fine. I think that so much of anxiety is like, I don't want to be surprised. I just don't want to be surprised
exactly.
by
it's
anything.
It's a control thing too. Like yeah. if I can control my environment. I think that's absolutely, I guess, and you learn that through life, but how do we, I love that they're talking to young kids because you're saying we don't talk about it a lot. And I feel like now we're hearing more and more that young kids are having anxiety just like in the last few years because it's social media or whatever. But mm-hmm. then you realize their parents have it. So there is more interest. I mean, there is more of like attention to it, but that's such a true, like we just beat ourselves. And if you're anxious, I had ADD. Like, I remember reading a book when I was like 28, and it was Driven to Distraction by this guy, Ned Hallowell. I was like reading it, and I was like, 76 questions that you take if you have ADD, which anxiety is sort of like an umbrella with ADD. And people say, like, oh, it's not really, it's ADD doesn't exist. I don't fucking care. Whatever you call it, it's like, it's all part of the same thing, anxiety. And I read that and I checked the boxes. It was like, yeah. And I was like, overwhelmingly, I was like, oh, this has a name for it that I just felt like I was constantly trying to control my brain to focus. And
yeah.
it was like, oh, it felt so, such a relief. But to feel that there was like someone who understood or there was a name for it, it just mm-hmm. gives you sort of some freedom. And then you could start to kind of find coping mechanisms. But it's such a negative thing. Maybe like look at the gifts of it is so important. Like,
yeah.
What are the things that your anxiety has served you, Courtney?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the reason that anxiety exists, I think just in, you know, sort of genetically or, you know, from back in the olden times when people didn't wear clothes and were hairier, it was essentially anxiety kept us alive. Like the people who survived back then were the anxious ones. The ones who like didn't recognize that a saber-toothed tiger might eat
right.
them died.
Exactly.
You know?
Right. Like
so,
you have to be scanning the environment for things happening.
Yes.
Like the boar coming on to like eat you or you want to kill it or whatever. Protect our family.
Yeah.
It's adaptive. It's like living in the fight or flight.
Yeah. And I think that honestly, I mean, in some ways it's made me, I guess a little bit more discerning as well. Like it's, you know, like I definitely, you know, I look at situations and I, that can be a positive and negative thing, right? Because I do feel like it's made me more judgmental.
Okay. Okay.
And you know, and letting go of some of that judgment, I think it helps you a lot too in sort of like, you know, I've been doing mindfulness work and,
yeah,
you know, and so much of that
is. I was going to ask what has been the most helpful for you in managing anxiety? Mindfulness.
It's been a lot of different things. There's a book by Barry McDonough called DARE that was very helpful for me.
Okay.
It's essentially, DARE is an acronym and, you know, it's about sort of, he changed his own relationship with this anxiety by, you know, D is for diffuse. And he just sort of, you know, he would have a panic attack and he'd be like, oh my God, what if I die? And his response to that was, so what? You know, I won't have to cook dinner. Because it's always just, it's such a struggle to figure out what to make, you know?
Wow, yeah.
So
flip that. No, it's so true. It's like, well, I love what you're saying about that change takes time. Because I think that we so want instant results. And then mm-hmm. we're told we're going to get it if we sign up or we meditate. It's taken me like so many years of meditating till I finally like have moments where I'm more consistent than not that I feel the change or just anything in life. When we're in the process of change, we want it to be done. And then you look back and you're like, oh, like you must look back at this year of all these brave things you did. And it was probably, it was your most interesting year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. 100% the most interesting year of my life. And I think that you're talking about meditating and how it's, you know, it can be frustrating because you feel like you're not doing it right. And that's another thing too, that I think anxious people just need to remember is you beating yourself up or fighting your anxiety is making you more anxious. If you could just let go of that, you're going to take away a layer of that anxiety.
It's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same. Like I saw this, Matt Stone and Trey Parker. I saw them on Charlie Rose and they were talking about how they would beat themselves up for how they would always wait till the last minute to do the show. And they just felt like garbage about it. And they tried to get it done earlier. They never did. And when they finally just said, this is how we work, it took away about like 50% of their anxiety around that work.
God, yes.
Because that was the 50% of it was them just being like, why are we so sucky?
Yeah.
You know?
I can so relate to that, exactly. Courtney. I mean, all the time, and people are always reminding me, going, well, just accept yourself. So that's part of the things that you grow up and you mature and you do work on yourself is when you finally just realize I just have to accept all of this.
It's
all the things that I am.
It's so hard. And I think it's particularly hard for women, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into your email questions. All right, guys, I love answering your questions. This is why I exist on the planet. If you want a question answered on the show, go to sexwithemily.com, click the Ask Emily tab, fill out the short form, we got you, or just email feedback@sexwithemily.com, but always include your name, your age, and how you listen to the show. Okay, thanks. Okay, Jamie, you want to read the emails?
But of course. This first one comes to us from Michael, who is 42 in Michigan. Dear Dr. Emily, I've been married for 15 years, great sex life. My wife and I have been talking about a four-way. I like when she tells me about her past sex life, and when I think of her with another man, it really turns me on. But we were role-playing a few days ago, and she was showing me what she would do to another guy, and it was hot, but in the middle of it, I started to get very jealous. My question is, should we go ahead and try the four-way, or maybe some small steps before we go all out? Thanks. Love your show.
All right, Michael. This is great because, listen, I do believe that couples should not just jump into bringing in other partners into the relationship, whether it's a threesome or a foursome. So, I mean, you did what I often tell people to do is before you do it, role play it first and see how it makes you feel. So now that you did that, I think it's important to go back to her and say, you know, because you guys sound like you have wonderful communication and say, you know what? This is what made me jealous. And I mean, we didn't get into here, but maybe there was something, a point when she said she had a crazy orgasm, or maybe she said she was, you know, sucking his penis or doing something that triggered you. What did it all make you jealous? Was it just the fact that there was another man there, or was it something in particular? Because if you really break it down, you know, you might figure out, well, I don't want any kissing. Or I don't want to know who this person is. Maybe she used a friend's name. So I think kind of drilling down on what it was could help you guys if you're having healthy communication and figure out, you know, what you actually like. Now, if it doesn't work for you and you're like, you know what, Emily, we went through it and we talked through it again, because I would insist that you role play it again now after you kind of figure out what things triggered you and then see if it works. But if it still doesn't work, that is totally okay. It's okay for couples. It's okay for it not to work for you. And it's okay to figure out other things that you might do, you know, that spice it up. So I think that, you know, role playing it, talking it through, going slow, letting it sit with you, and then seeing where you go from there is a totally acceptable way to go. And this is another thing I want to say to you, Michael, is what I love about you and your wife is that you're really handling this well and you do have excellent communication. And so I believe that if the foursome doesn't work out, that the two of you can definitely find some other ways to keep this hot.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I love the idea of a foursome.
Well, because
everyone's got a job,
right? No one gets left out.
Exactly.
Everyone's genitals are getting touched at some point.
Exactly. Four is a great number.
You go from one vagina, wash it off a little bit, go to the next one.
Exactly. Penis, whatever, have things, wipes around.
Yeah, freshies.
Use some freshie wipes. We love those for sex.
Okay, this next one comes to us from Ida, who's 28 in Finland. Hello, Dr. Emily. My husband and I have sex every morning. The problem, though, is he never wants to change positions. We always run the dog. Doggy style.
Run the dog. I've never heard of this.
Can we change it? Okay, done. I want to do other positions. How can I get him to want to try something else?
That's a great question, Ida. I don't blame you. So here's what happens. You guys are in a routine. We've heard of these sex routines, and sometimes they become a sex rut. And so what it means is he's trained his body that when you guys are in doggy style, that's when he can ejaculate. And a lot of men will say that's true. They're like, I can only come in this position. Well, it's training. Guarantee you, if you guys kind of, you know, try other positions and you build up again, he'll be able to come in other positions. So my best advice for you, as it is for anybody who wants to try something new in the bedroom, is to talk about it outside the bedroom and just say to him, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, I love that we, you know, have such hot sex and that we have sex every morning. It's like makes waking up so great. And if you use the compliment sandwich approach where you start out saying, this is what I love about it, and then say, I really would love to switch up positions, for example, and then tell him the positions that you would like to try. Maybe you just want missionary. Maybe you want to use your toy. Maybe you want to be on top, and then you can explain it to him. So I think that right now he never wants to change positions because he probably just is like, this is going to work. So I think if you kind of talk and then he kind of knows what's going to happen, he'll say, okay, so now is when you're going to get on top. And so I know that, you know, this will definitely make you both feel better. And you can also let him know the reason why you want to switch positions is because you have more pleasure in other positions. Variety is really hot for you. You like being on top because, you know, you can look down on him. You can control the depth. You can know that you can have an orgasm. So I think actually letting our partners know why we also want to mix things up can totally make a difference and get them on board, right? But talk about it outside. Give them a picture of what's going to happen. Because if she just says, I want to try new positions, why don't you ever want to try positions?
Yeah.
That'll just put them on the defensive.
Exactly. And I mean, no one, especially doggy style, to always do that, it just feels, I love it, but to do that every time would feel so disconnecting for me.
Exactly. Yes, and that's the thing about doggy style. Very disconnecting for some. I mean, it can feel amazing, but you're not making eye contact. It feels like it's disassociating. And for some people, that just feels, it can feel degrading.
Yeah. And it's just like, dude, the first thing.
I don't think that, but people can feel like, oh, I'm a, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, some people.
Because they're not looking in their eyes.
You can always turn around, I guess. That might freak them out.
You could look in their eyes, turning around.
It depends
around
on how good your neck flexibility is, but.
I think any position will feel that way. Like, why are we only doing it one way?
Exactly.
You get bored. Like, any position could feel like, is this all we have? Is this all we got?
Do you think that happens to people that just really like routine sometimes?
Absolutely. I have been with those people because I'm not a huge routine person. It's like, takes a lot. But I've been with people who are very routine oriented when it comes to sex. And that is a recipe for boredom, boring sex. You know, variety is the spice of your sex life. And it's your job on the planet to figure out what that's going to be that's going to keep your sex life interesting and hot. And a lot of that starts with your own exploration, masturbation. What do you actually like? Doing research together or on your own, like seeing like what else is out there? Because some people might be thinking, I don't know what other positions there are. So check it out. Check out, you know, we've got a lot of great stuff on our website, mm-hmm. sexwithemily.com. We've got great blogs about how to actually like try different positions, like different positions with a twist, like missionary with a twist, like put your legs over their shoulders, or spooning sex is also great for the morning.
Yes, I love spooning in the morning.
Me too. Like doggy style is a lot in the morning.
You gotta,
I don't like doggy style to me is not a morning sex thing.
Unless you're like still
for me.
Yeah.
I'm
I mean
tired.
It'd be one of those ones where your face is just down on the pillow still and your like ass is just out in
exactly.
the air and you're just like, just enter me. Like,
that's a good
on,
variation of doggy style. I like that one. I like when I'm still sleeping but my ass is in the air. So
there
go
we go.
I love it. Okay, thanks for your email, Ida. Let us know how it goes. We appreciate you.
All right. This last one comes to us from Joe, who's 56 in Pennsylvania. Hi, Dr. Emily. My question is this. My wife found my webcam account on my phone. I have been playing on this site for some time now and have developed some good/fun friendships with both genders. I do have a few primary friendships online, and admittedly, they are more than I intended. She views my online activity as infidelity, whereas I view it as interactive porn. I'm not interested in ending my marriage, but I want to keep my online friends too. We're in therapy for this together and separately. Any thoughts? Additionally, she only wants me to masturbate to porn in bed next to her. I haven't done it yet, but it's maybe a way to rebuild some trust. She's been very patient and open about these conversations, but the camming is a hard no. I miss it as I've respected her wishes to stay off of it. Also, she doesn't believe me that other husbands masturbate to porn with some frequency too. Is it normal to masturbate daily? Lately, she's having anxiety over my alone time is not permitting me to have any. She worries she can't keep up with my sex drive. I told her she doesn't have to, but I'm not sure what to do at this point.
Okay, there's a lot here to unpack, Joe. Okay, first off, the thing is, everyone gets to decide what actually constitutes infidelity. Now, some people would say, you know, cam girl interaction or watching porn is infidelity. Now, I think that if you're having, you know, you're having interactions, you're having emotional connections with people, even if you're not meeting them in person, I can see why your wife might say, you know what, that doesn't feel great to me. And I would also say this might be a sign that maybe there's some intimacy that's lacking in your relationship with your wife, and that maybe there could be some more talking about how you guys can sort of enhance your sex life. And so I feel like, you know, the fact also that you're keeping it secret and you are hiding it from her is also why she feels like it's cheating, and she found all the messages and all the stuff. Where I have a problem with this is her restricting your behavior and not letting you be alone and saying, you know, you can only masturbate with me in bed. And so I feel like that, I like that you're both in therapy. I think that's amazing. And I also think it would be great to hopefully if your therapist can guide you in all some of this, because not all therapists are actually trained of how to navigate couples to have healthier sex, that maybe they can help you figure out, well, what is your wife into? What does she need sexually? What turns her on? And then you guys can figure out together, you know, what you both like, because, you know, it is normal to masturbate daily. It is very common. A lot of married men masturbate every day to porn. And so do women. So it could just be she's okay with porn, but maybe she's not okay with the extracurricular relationships and the messaging men and women. And also that's a lot of time, I would think. So it's just like maybe she would like more of that coming back towards her. She wants intimacy with you. She wants connection. She wants talk is what I'm hearing from your email. And so I think that if you could kind of figure out how to give that to her and so you guys feel more connected, you might find that you don't have as much of a need for as much interaction online. And so I like that, again, I like that you're being honest with her. But I would say that also, like, she has to kind of loosen it up a bit, that you are still free to actually masturbate, have time alone. So I think this is something great to bring into therapy. And also, you know, I love the idea of looking at our yes, no, maybe list at sexwithemily.com, which is like a list of a lot of different things you guys could try in bed, and you could figure out what works for both of you. But it sounds like therapy is also going to help you guys get there a little bit, but figure out what you both like. And I think that the restrictions are heavy, but I would love you guys to both come together and figure out what works for you guys.
Yeah, it seems like she's trying to do an overcorrection of what she found. So she's like, you went so far, but so now she's like taking it away. But that's like a bonding thing you do with yourself, at least the regular. Sorry, Emily just put her gum on the cup.
I didn't want it to be chewing gum. Right.
I love it. Anyways, I find, for all of you out there, I find gum in very random places.
She found gum in the prep notes. I'm sorry about that.
It's okay.
Oh my God.
I also find lipstick kisses sometimes.
I send it to kiss the papers. Blotting my lips.
Our job. I like to think that you do it for me.
I do, Jamie. I send you kisses every day. Especially Valentine's Day kisses. Coming up, mm-hmm. By the way. We've got Valentine's Day shows for you guys as well you can check out. All right. Thanks for your emails. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the show. And please rate us, review us wherever you listen right now. Look down at your phone. If you're on an app, you can give us 5 stars. We love that. Comment on iTunes. And if you want to know more about certain topics, you want us to cover them, or you have any questions, feedback@sexwithemily.com. Thanks to my awesome team, Ken, Kristen, Elisa, Brian, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.